the Allstate Skyline Studio.
WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything that's in the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Monday morning, everyone. Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm already looking the week ahead. Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. Welcome to this edition of the Sunday Spin for January the 6th, 2019. Yes, the first Sunday of the new year, and a happy new year to everyone from the Sunday Spin. This is our weekly look at the world of politics and policy, going from the City Hall to the State House and all the way on to the White House. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week and 2019 off to a great start. Well, I hope everyone had a great new year. It's always kind of nice to whitewash away the negatives of 2018 and look optimistically toward a new year. Unfortunately, mine is going to start with perhaps some surgery after cracking my right shoulder after a fall on the ice last weekend.
You threw me for a loop when you walked into the newsroom this morning.
Well, so I'll be getting a new right wing.
You were thrown for quite a loop yourself.
Yes, I was. I'll be getting a new right wing, which might be something that the Blackhawks might be looking for.
They do. Drake DeJula has joined the team as the new right winger today.
So there's a little synergy going on there. I went to the Winter Classic, despite my injury. Quite an event, I have to tell you. Listen to Andy doing the extended pregame show on the way over to South Bend. First time I'd ever seen, and we left about 8:30 in the morning. First time, and took the toll road over. First time I'd ever seen a toll plaza where there was no parking spaces. I mean, they were a bit overwhelmed there in the across the Indiana line there with the at the Starbucks and the Burger King. It was just jammed, and it was an amazing event to watch. You know, you're there with 76,000 of your closest friends, and the temperature was decent. It was about 32 degrees. And I'm sure it's not something, a trip my doctor would have recommended, but I had to go because I'd never been to one before. And
you had the tickets.
I had the tickets.
You were not far away. You were a passionate hockey person.
Yeah.
Blackhawks.
And it was a good game for the most part, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, I agree.
And obviously third period is always can be a dagger with these guys. The one thing is, and people asked about this too, and I actually recorded the game so I could see how it looked on TV versus, you know, actually being in the stands. And with TV, you have the better sense of the rink than you do from the stands because just of the way they were located. I think they went from the 17-yard line to the other 17-yard line, and they were – obviously, the rink is centered in the football field, and so you had to be a little bit higher up to really get a sense of the action and where the puck was, except that the higher up you were, the further away from the field you were, so that made it a little harder, and the one video board at Notre Dame was a constant help, I will tell you. But yeah, it was just from Jim Cornelison singing the national anthem to Weezer at the first intermission. I mean, it was very nice. A flyover. I mean, it is kind of like a Super Bowl kind of thing.
It does have that feel normally, and it's kind of evolved as time has gone on because I don't remember. I was at the 2009 one at Wrigley. And I don't think there was a whole lot of entertainment in between periods. I think it was just kind of a normal situation where there was music playing, but it wasn't a band that was per se out on the field.
Right, right, right. But no, just a lot of fun. Everybody in a good mood. I have to tell you, about a third of the stands were Bruins fans. I was kind of amazed at the pouring out by the Bostonians, and I had seen some of them around town earlier in the week, but it'd be nice if we could just win an outdoor game.
How about it?
I mean, is this the fifth loss or sixth loss?
One in five overall. Right. That includes two stadium series games
right,
that don't count as Winter Classics, so 0-4 in the Winter Classic.
Yeah, it's... But we know why they keep picking us.
Well, yeah. I mean, you saw 70s. I think it was the second largest crowd to ever see an NHL game. And that is behind the 2014 Winter Classic that was at the Big House in Michigan.
Right.
Where they had 105. But it was, in fact, the largest crowd to ever see a Blackhawks game.
Oh, good point.
Yeah.
Good point. So, no, it's a great event. It's a great event. The folks at Notre Dame, I think they were a bit overwhelmed at times. I know that the concessions ran out at various points, mm-hmm. but it was quite a show. And it's always, you know, the campus there is just fun to walk through anyway.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Especially during a game day.
What time did you get there?
And
I'll tell you why I'm asking. When you let me know.
Well, get there, what do you mean?
Because what time did you get to the actual football stadium?
To the stadium itself, mm-hmm. Was probably, well, I'm forgetting Eastern time here, but
that's true.
Probably about 11 o'clock, which noon.
Okay. The only reason I ask is we had John Weideman on our show.
I was listening to him say, because we had literally just pulled off the toll road, and we're listening to him say about how, even though was staying at a hotel in South Bend.
Not even 2 miles away.
Yeah, he wasn't sure what time he was going to arrive at the stadium.
He was stuck in traffic. I think he told me later that as he was talking to us, he moved maybe a half a mile. And we had him on for probably 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, we were laughing because we're like, when he first said, I'm not sure what time I'm going to get there, mm-hmm. we thought, please don't tell me you're leaving right now from Chicago.
No. It was the hotel. And I'd asked somebody about that because Notre Dame, obviously, when you have a football game, a lot of the people are actually coming from the campus. So you're not having a lot of people driving.
Right.
Because there's people that live there and can walk there and that kind of thing. But this is a situation where everybody was coming from everywhere else. And those service roads in and out of Notre Dame Stadium are not really designed for all of that traffic.
No, and some of the parking signs were kind of weird, too. I mean, when we first got there and there were signs pointing to general parking in two places, and we, of course, took the road we thought was less traveled, and that turned out to be that it was for prepaid parking.
Ah.
So that meant we had to circle back around to go to the original spot. But it wasn't bad. I mean, they had shuttles to take you to the stadium and from the parking areas, so it was fine, relatively fine getting to the game. It was after the game when the line for the shuttles was about 3 miles long. That was and of course that only served for a longer period of time for the Bruins fans to be able to taunt us in our Blackhawk gear,
to be obnoxious.
Exactly. But no, it was fun. And of course, obviously, today, the game we've been waiting for, the big game, Big Bears Day, this afternoon, Philadelphia Soldier Field.
Mm-hmm.
My buddy Jeff Hughes from New York is in town. He writes Da Bears blog. He's going to the game with his buddy Noah. Hooked up with him yesterday, and we just talked about how we never could imagine this team getting this far this fast.
Yeah, it's I kind of liken it to what the Cubs did in 15 when no one really expected them to get anywhere, and they got to the national championship game. It kind of set the stage for what happened the following year. But and you can look back in history at the 84 Bears, which got to the NFC championship game, lost to the San Francisco 49ers, and then did what they did the following year as well. But yeah, I mean, you had a lot of different ingredients to kind of overcome here because you have a brand new coach. You've got basically still a first-year quarterback because of limited experience that he had last year and nobody really calling plays for him. An offensive-minded head coach in his first season, and you really don't know what to expect. But from what everybody's telling me, I haven't been around this team at all, really, to be honest with you, just kind of looking at him from afar and hearing second- and third-hand reports. But from those that have been around, he has been, Matt Nagy I'm talking about, has been very cordial, very, very upfront, and very charismatic as far as dealing with the media. But you get the sense that his players are really all in. They are buying into what he is selling.
Yeah, and I mean, I've found his public comments very refreshing, that it's not kind of that sports bureaucratese.
You don't get sports talk from him. Yeah.
Where it's just mumbo jumbo that doesn't tell you what you want to know or what people want to know. And no, I mean, look, this to me is gravy. As Jeff mm-hmm. and I were talking, we were looking at, you know, before season and even before Khalil Mack, you know, best shot 8-8.
Yeah, I would say that would have been a real good shot.
Yeah, but I mean 12-4. This is to me. Yeah, I want them to win. I think they're going to win today.
I do too.
But this is all gravy, you know. Postseason this year is gravy.
Yeah, it's gravy, but you know, they're saying the right things because they really feel they're in Lake Forest, and I'll play a couple of cuts later on in sports, but you know, they really feel that their regular season would not be defined as a great season unless they win today.
Right.
Or unless they win and continue to go. So that's a really good good sound coming from that building when, you know, obviously they haven't been in the playoffs in 8 years.
Right. That's a good, I mean, it's a good theme, it's a good belief, mm-hmm. a good core belief that it, you know, there is no rest.
True.
And if you start taking the gas off the pedal, you're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what happens out there. I mean, injuries, a little bit of a concern with Eddie Jackson.
Right.
And now Trey Burton is on the injury list as well, the former Eagle. He had a groin injury that popped up last night. So they'll keep an eye on him as well. But I think, you know, dollars to donuts, if it's a playoff game, if you can walk and you can move, you're going to play.
Well, you know, and I'm truly, too, I was out on the Storm Center patio. Wind is a little bit of an issue here. I think now, granted, we're in a wind tunnel here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be very curious to see if the wind comes into play down there.
That scares me. I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, I'm just
going
to let it go right there.
I'm just going to say that.
No one has mentioned fog.
Yeah, 30 years ago yesterday, I believe
it was.
The
pictures were astounding. That brought back a lot of memories.
They sure did. They sure did.
They were. I saw this week.
The pictures of nothing.
Pictures of nothing.
Pea soup out there. Yeah.
Right.
The referee standing all by himself, or seemingly all by himself, and then you don't see anything else.
Oh gosh, what a time that was. Well, Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news. Andy has the latest sports. Producer Cassara is fielding your calls at 312-981-7200. That's our text number as well, 312-981-7200. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter @SundaySpin. Engineer Brett is putting on his Bears wear right now. Remember, you can find all of our shows on WGNRadio.com. You can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio on Playoff Sunday. Let's go Bears. Up ahead on your Sunday Spin, after Dave and Andy bring us a 7:30 news update, we'll speak to Bill Brady of Bloomington. He's the Senate Republican leader in Springfield. We'll talk about this week's inauguration of a new General Assembly. After the 8 o'clock news update, we'll speak to the House Republican leader in Springfield, Jim Durkin of Western Springs. With Democrats expanding their legislative majorities, taking control of the governor's office, we'll talk to him about where Republicans fit into this new dynamic. And we'll get a final check of the news and sports at 8:30, and then we'll speak to a good friend of the program, Amanda Vinicky. She's the politics and government correspondent for WTTW Channel 11. We'll talk about Springfield, but of course, we'll also talk about the travails facing Alderman Ed Burke. That's all coming up. Now we're going to launch our weekly spin through national politics, and day 15 of the partial government shutdown continues. President Trump requiring border wall funding, says a shutdown could last months or years to get it. Now talking about using national emergency authority powers, something that would certainly be challenged in court. But now with this Democratic majority in the U.S. House, they're fortified against Trump's border wall. But I want to go back to New Year's Day, just 6 days ago. Trump is alone at the White House amid this government shutdown, and he's touting his achievements as president.
There has never been an administration, and I'm very proud of this, that's done more than the Trump administration in the first 2 years of office. Our economy is doing great. Wages are rising for the first time in many, many years. People are getting more money. They're working one job instead of two or three. Also, we're working on new trade deals. We made a deal with Mexico. We made a deal with Canada. We made that deal with South Korea. Everybody said that couldn't happen. We terminated the horrible one-sided Iran nuclear deal. Then you look at North Korea. We're doing really well. Rockets aren't being fired. Missiles aren't being fired. We're in no rush. We moved our embassy to Jerusalem in Israel. I promised it, and I did it. We're doing so well as a country. We need, however, borders. You don't have borders, you don't have a country. We don't want drug traffickers or human traffickers or illegal people with criminal records to come in. Our Border Patrol, our ICE agents, our military, we've done great. But you can never do it perfectly unless you have a wall. So we have to have a wall.
So fast forward, of course, to Friday, January 4th. Trump meets with congressional leaders. No progress. Democrats now in control of the House aren't going to improve funding for the border wall. Chuck Schumer, the Senate Democratic leader, recounted the meeting with Trump.
We made a plea to the president once again. Don't hold millions of Americans, hundreds of thousands of workers hostage. Open up the government and let's continue the discussions. I pointed out to him, for instance, a call I got in my office this morning, a fire dispatcher from upstate New York, wife is pregnant, signed a mortgage, can't get the FAA to approve it now, FHA to approve it because the government is closed. This kind of situation is happening in millions of instances across the United States in one way or another. So we told the president we needed the government open. He resisted. In fact, he said he'd keep the government closed for a very long period of time, months or even years.
Months or even years. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN.
This is The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. So we heard Chuck Schumer say after meeting with the president on Friday, it could be months, it could be years, that this government shutdown continues. So at a briefing that the president held Friday afterwards to get the last word, White House correspondent for CBS Major Garrett asked Trump if really that's what he told Schumer and the Democratic leaders.
He also said, you said in the meeting, this is him quoting you, I just want to check, that the shutdown could go on for months or even a year or longer. Did you say that?
And I did. I did.
Is that your assessment of where we are?
Absolutely, I said that. I don't think it will, but I am prepared, and I think I can speak for Republicans in the House and Republicans in the Senate. They feel very strongly about having a safe country, having a border that makes sense without borders. I've said it many times. We don't have a country. I hope it doesn't go on even beyond a few more days.
Now, earlier in the week, Trump held a cabinet meeting to show his administration's resolve on the wall. And his acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, offered great praise for the president.
Sir, Mr. President, I will start by highlighting the fact that you stayed in Washington, D.C. over the holidays, giving up Christmas with your family, New Year's with your family, trying to bring an end to this shutdown and security to our southern border, while members of Congress, some members of Congress, went on vacation and ignored the problem. You have demonstrated your dedication to delivering on this critical issue for our country and for the American people, but Congress has to act. They have to fund the wall. It is undeniable that a border wall improves the security of our southern border.
That's Acting Attorney General Matt Whitaker. We're going to turn things more local now, and joining me on the phone is the State Senate Republican leader, Bill Brady of Bloomington. Senator Brady, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, thank you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, and let's go Bears, huh?
Yeah, all right. I don't think anyone's not looking forward to that victory this afternoon.
Oh, isn't that the truth? We need some victories, you know?
We do. Sports victories, financial government victories, all kinds of victories Illinois needs, and we're going to. You know, I'm optimistic that we're gonna see a lot of good things happen this year.
Well, and I want to ask you about that optimism, and certainly, you know, as I said at the start of the show, with the new year, it's kind of like, you know, there is kind of a let's let's not focus on the past. Let's look ahead. Let's look where we can get things done. And in talking to you in the past after the election, talking to your colleague Jim Durkin, the House Republican leader, that there was this kind of a sense of optimism. And if anything, I thought it almost a reflection of can we find a sense of normalcy again?
Well, you have to be optimistic if you're going to want to represent people in the Illinois Senate and the Illinois House. And as governor as well. And we know Illinois needs stability. It needs to put it in a position where people can believe there is a future utilizing Illinois' people, its assets, and so forth. And that's the only thing that's going to move us forward, creating jobs, keeping people in Illinois, stopping the exodus, the out-migration. And to do that, we're going to need some good government policies. We're more than willing to work with our colleagues on the other side of the aisle and Governor-elect Pritzker to get that job done.
I mean, that's a theme that applies across all lines, all partisan lines, is wanting to restore and improve a business climate to end the out-migration. But we're still, you know, handicapped by our fiscal problems.
We are. And we're going to have to address those. Governor Rutter tried to address them. We tried to address them even under the Clinton administration. Part of them are dealing with the pension problems that challenge our state, past mistakes that have been made. We need to try to rectify that to bring stability. Part of them, I think, require bipartisan compromise. The Democrats are in control, but I think we can make business reforms work, much like we tried to do in what was called the Grand Compromise. And I'm hopeful that we can get back to trying to do some of those things and stop the partisan divide. Clearly, we understand the Democrats are in charge. And for the Republican Party and our members to have value, we have to bring solutions to the table as well. We're willing to work on that. There are things we will not agree on. I can't imagine one Republican supporting a graduated income tax constitutional amendment or a hike in income taxes. We want to fight to reduce the tax burden on families and businesses, but we realize that's going to take time, job creation, growth, and we're going to have to work with the Democrats to make Illinois a growing state again.
You touched briefly, and as we talk about looking ahead optimistically in the future, I'm going to ask you to step back a little bit. You talked about the grand bargain. How close were we really towards getting that grand bargain agreement?
We were very close. My memory serves me that I was asked by then my leader, Chris Redonia, to help negotiate that with the Senate Democrats. I then became leader. I was working with all four caucuses in the wee hours, and then pressure surmounted on Speaker Madigan, and he went ahead without the deal and passed a tax increase that he was able to, you know, break some Republicans on. And but for those Republicans breaking, we would have had, I believe, a really balanced approach to moving this state forward.
I was told that, for example, on things like workers' compensation changes, that it was literally like semicolons and paragraphs, commas, and those kinds of things from an agreement.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, but there were significant alterations in the language that we were dealing with in the area of workers' compensation. The one thing that the Democrats will not bend on in that area
causation.
Is causation. But there were significant discussion savings agreements in that area for business interest job creators that would have made Illinois more competitive and yet protected injured workers. Other states have causation standards that are different than ours to protect injured workers in the workplace, but Illinois was not. Democratic majority President Colton was unwilling to bend on causation. We were willing to work with that, although we would prefer a fairer standard, but there were significant changes and alterations. So I believe that President Colton, and as I said, after I became leader, we began working not just with Senate Democrats, but with all four caucuses, and frankly, Governor Rauner's administration started working on something that would have provided significant property tax relief, would have looked at local government reform, pension reform, other things in that we can go back to. I've had discussions with Governor Pritzker about how he wants to use his ability to make Illinois better, and I think he's open to many of those things that will do good things. As I said, there are things that we will disagree on. The Democrats have already got their tax increase. We don't need another tax increase. But what we do need is we need to fulfill some of the other things that were part of the grand bargain, like property tax relief, local government consolidation and standardization, pension reforms, job-creating issues that will move this state forward. The truth of the matter is we can't tax and spend our way out of or into stability, let's say. What we have to do is we have to make Illinois a job-producing state again, and that will create the stability that we need.
But with the fact that the election resulted in expanded Democratic majorities in both the House and the Senate, is there a reason, in your belief, that Democrats would want to return to those issues, you know, like workers' comp, which is something that a core Democratic fundraising constituency is the civil bar? I mean, is there a reason you believe that they would be willing to go back to those issues?
Well, I think they want to. I hope, and I do believe they want to have success. And success is measured by: are we stabilizing our state's finances, and are we creating jobs and opportunity for Illinois individuals and families? We need those reforms to create opportunities, and for the Democrats to succeed, they need to prove that, as in their positions, they have had success. So I believe there is motivation to look at other states and to do what can be done to make this state better. I believe that Governor Pritzker comes with a job-creating attitude to this position, and he's not beholden to, you know, anybody, frankly, from my perspective. He's his own person, clearly, when it comes to how he finances his campaign to other things. He's a business person. He understands the challenges that businesses face, and I trust that he's going to use those instincts and those experiences to weigh in on policy. So I've got to look at this optimistic. I think my caucus is looking at this optimistic and take advantage of everything we can to grow this state as we need to. We need an infrastructure program. We know we need revenues for that infrastructure program. So we're going to have to look at things that traditionally we wouldn't have looked at to help stabilize this state.
We're speaking with State Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington. He is the Illinois Senate Republican leader. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Skyline studio, joined on the phone by Illinois Senate Republican leader Bill Brady of Bloomington. And we're talking about the swearing in of a new General Assembly in the week ahead and where Republicans kind of fit into this dynamic. And Senator Brady, one of the questions I had is, and you kind of touched on this, is you see that Democrats want to show that they're having successes. But truly, I mean, with their majorities, it's their job to prove that they're doing something, isn't it? Isn't there an onus on them?
Well, there's no question. And I think this, in retrospect, one of the problems Governor Rauner had in getting reelected is that he was not able to accomplish something. His challenge was he had a Democratic-controlled General Assembly. So I think it is on the Democrats and the onus to get something done. But I think they also realize that they've got to be careful, and let's just say, to how liberal or how left they go. And I think that's where we can provide value by working with them in a bipartisan way to do more middle of the political spectrum advancements for Illinois that we all know we need. And the key here is let's look at other states and what their successes are, even Massachusetts. And Governor Rauner has been quoted as saying this. Massachusetts, certainly what we would have considered a more liberal bastion than Illinois, made significant business reform proposals and government reform proposals that advanced their state, that were more bipartisan, middle of the road. And I think we need to look at those states as examples, because at the end of the day, that's what we're competing against. I look at government as a place, as a state that competes against other states to try to utilize its advantages to give opportunities to the people who live in that state. And there's so much we can learn from other states, and I'm hopeful that we can convince the Democrats that by learning from other states how they're growing jobs and we're not, can help us grow jobs and talk about the values and the advantages Illinois has, rather than continue to focus on our losses.
You touched on infrastructure, which is just, to me, is just a repeated, you know we need it, and we know we got to pay for it. And we need it bad, and it's and we need a big infrastructure program, and it's going to be costly. But you know, we already hear, oh, don't raise the gas tax, don't do X, Y, and Z. Where do you see this falling? The whole idea.
I see it coming in as kind of a grand bargain, let's say. You're right. Part of our argument and part of what we've got to articulate is the cost of not maintaining our infrastructure is greater than the cost of maintaining it, both in the loss of jobs, but also in the actual cost. When you reach a point where you can't repair a road and you have to rip it out and put a whole new one in, you get into huge costs. So part of it's educating the public about why that investment is in terms valuable for the taxpayers now, and how it works to enhance our geographical benefit and job creation. And then one of the advantages that I believe, in my mind, we have right now is we put a constitutional amendment in place that says if we're going to raise gas taxes, it will go and can only go to investing in the infrastructure in the state. And we call that the Lockbox Amendment. I think that was an important step that'll give credibility that the taxpayers will believe, okay, I believe the legislature is spending money where they're telling me are. So those are a couple things that are important. Governor Pritzker's open-minded approach to expanding entertainment in the form of gaming and other things to help provide additional revenues, I think, is going to be refreshing there. So I believe that we have an argument that the taxpayers will buy, Republicans, Democrats, and Independents will buy, about why it's so important that we have safe roads, that we have roads that are good for commerce, and that roads that are good investment for the taxpayers.
Well, and it would seem to me, too, you know, let's face it, it's been a while since there have been some ribbon cuttings going on, and you are able to show in a tangible way where your money's going with infrastructure versus just, you know, the general taxes being taken out of your paycheck.
Absolutely.
So you're not ruling out a gas tax increase?
I'm not. I believe that the investment in infrastructure is appropriate for the reasons I've mentioned: public safety, job creation, and frankly, good financial investment. And we're at the cusp of really needing that. Frankly, Rick, the thing that I can't support is a increase in the income tax or a graduated income tax. I just think it would destroy this state and cause more people. But there are things that I think the Democrats are hopeful they'll work, like the estate tax is causing many of our wealthiest people to move to Florida. I just had a discussion with one of those individuals yesterday. The Democrats are realizing that, and they don't want to see them leave the state either, because they take their money, they take their other taxes and jobs. So I'm hopeful that there are some tax policies that we can put in place that will be positive for Illinois. But by and large, my biggest concern is that we couldn't support an increase in the income tax. The Democrats, I think, will be pressured to do so. But on everything else, we need to work together, and I think we can move this state forward.
You touched also on the issue of trying to deal with pensions. Is there truly, in your belief, anything we can deal with pensions, or is it just the fact that we've had the court rulings, we know what the Constitution says, and that's, you know, we have to pay the piper?
Well, there are two issues here. One is the one you bring up, and I don't think we've exhausted every possibility of savings. And President Cullerton initiated a savings plan, which in effect would have said, if you want your 3% COLA, which is very expensive to us, you can't apply it to any pay raises from this day forward, or you can have it apply to pay raises, but it'll be much fairer or more in tune with economic times by lower than 3% as your cost of living increase. $1 billion savings, some estimate a year, which could go to fund schools and infrastructure and other things. President Cullerton's been an advocate of that, whether or not he can get Democratic support for that. But I think as part of a big plan, all will see the value in that savings, and what they would get out of other things would offset what they would lose in their mind from a political interest on that. So I think that's an avenue. I think the other thing we've got to look at is how we restructure the pension debt and how we actually pay for it. And that's going to be an important part of the discussion as we make sure we invest in the rest, because we have to have resources to invest in the rest of Illinois in order to keep the jobs here. And if we don't keep the only way we can pay the pension debt is to keep jobs in Illinois and opportunities in Illinois to make our state stable again and our economy and our finances stable.
I like this bumper sticker, make Illinois stable again. Republican State Senator Bill Brady, the Senate Republican leader from Bloomington, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Rick, thanks for having me again. Happy New Year and go Bears.
Absolutely. We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio. Joining me in studio, and a happy new year to you, is Illinois House Republican Leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs.
Good morning, Rick. Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for coming in studio.
My pleasure.
I know it's a busy week ahead.
Sure.
And we have the inauguration of a new General Assembly on Wednesday. But there are a few business days in advance of that, of the lame duck session. Hearing some actions might be taking place there. What are you hearing?
What I'm hearing is that there will be a legislation that will be promoted. It'll probably start in the House of Representatives, which will basically terminate the terms of the board members for the Illinois tollway system. And also, there will be legislation which will increase the cap that is currently in place for salaries for agency directors. That's my understanding that I've heard through staff. I have not seen language to date, but that's the general idea of what at least will be taking up. There could be some other things. You just never know, particularly in the House of Representatives. Things just happen to pop up out of nowhere. But that's my understanding of two matters that we will take up.
So, one, the toll highway authority, so that would basically freeze the board members and they're done.
They'll be done, but I from what I understand, that they're free to reapply. But, you know, that's my understanding of what will happen. The current board will be eliminated and it'll be reconstituted.
Has there been any rationale for that?
I've not heard it from the administration, but what I've been hearing is that the board has been, in a sense, dysfunctional over the past few years. One member of the board, I think, has been particularly problematic and has been more obstruction. So other than that, I think that the new administration just wants to start fresh at the tollway. And, you know, and I'm open to the concept. I want to see the language, but other than that, we'll find out more over the next 24 hours.
And raising salary caps for administrators seems kind of interesting at a time when we're still a state in kind of a fiscal calamity.
Well, it is. But I know that, and I've had a conversation with the governor-elect, and he's trying to bring in some really top talent, really good talent throughout the United States to come into Illinois. And one of them, I think, is a Midwest director for Uber, to come in and probably making seven figures, and to say that we're going to pay you $150,000 a year, not exactly the most enticing way to bring in good talent. So That's been a complaint I know from Governor Rauner, is that it's difficult to find good people at $150,000 to work and to run, you know, large agencies that have, you know, $100 million budgets to run. So, again, I'm open to that. I think we got to bring good people in, and I'm willing to give this administration the benefit of the doubt that they need a little, they need some help to, you know, bring in qualified people to run state government.
So I had your colleague, the Senate Republican leader, Bill Brady, on earlier this morning, and I said from both of you, I've gotten this sense of, you know, kind of an optimistic sense. And, you know, obviously the proof will be when the rubber hits the road, when the new administration, the new General Assembly gets sworn in. But is there a bit of responsibility here that Democrats expanded their majorities in the legislature, they won the governor's office, that, I mean, there's a certain onus on them to perform?
Agree. With a majority comes great responsibilities. And when you have the numbers that they do in both the House and the Senate, there's going to be greater expectation on them from their constituencies. I do know that historically in the House, major initiatives have been crafted by both sides, in which there's participation from the minority party and also with the majority party. But yes, there is going to be greater expectations. But the House is a little bit different. You've got an incoming class. It's kind of what I'm witnessing out in Washington. You have a progressive group of legislators who are coming in that may not fall in line as others have over previous General Assemblies. So I think the dynamics are a little bit different. While they do have a large majority, I think it may be, I can't predict, but I think putting all of them together on important votes will be a challenge. And that's where I see that the Republican minority will have skin in the game on major issues. And my conversations, again, with the governor-elect have been that he is seeking Republican cooperation on major initiatives, whatever that may be. And I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt to work on issues that I think are important for the state. If my caucus believes that it's good for the state, it's good for the districts, you know, we can work together. But the dynamics of this, of Wednesday with this swearing-in process, could be very interesting. You have some outspoken freshmen coming in on the Democrat side. It could be some
who have said that they will not support Speaker Madigan.
That's what I understand. So there could be some high theater at the University of Illinois auditorium on Wednesday.
You do raise an interesting point. We've seen at least one member who hasn't even been sworn in yet and is already pledging to run against Dick Durbin in 2020.
I tried that back.
I was going to say, yes, I think I remember the Durbin-Durkin contest, yes. But which is a little bit of hubris, I would say, at yes. this stage of the game. I'm reminded, and I've told this story before, when I look at this kind of incoming Democratic class in the House, that it reminds me of the story Phil Rock used to tell back in the days of what was known as the Crazy Eight, when Democrats had a supermajority in the state Senate, and he would get up every morning and to shave, and he'd look at that razor, and he didn't know whether to shave or to cut his throat.
That's pretty funny. I've heard that line before. I'm not quite sure if this is exactly how the speaker wants the next 2 years to play out. But again,
it's his majority.
It's his majority. And he can have all the fun and joy of running that caucus, which he has over the past many years. And I'm sure it'll be just as uplifting this next 2 years as well.
Well, so where do you see that dynamic, though? As you said, you've spoken repeatedly now to Governor-elect Pritzker. Have you spoken to the speaker?
No, I have not.
How do you see the dynamic of those two?
That's going to play out. I know that in years past, the speaker is actually, before Governor Rauner, has had, you know, I think has worked better with Republican governors than Democrat governors. If you look at the history of going back to Governor Quinn, Governor Blagojevich, I don't think there was a lot of I wouldn't maybe respect, but I think that there was challenges that there was that the speaker had with Democrat governors. Always worked well with.
Well, before Blagojevich, the speaker never had a Democratic governor as speaker.
It's been a while, yeah.
But 1983, and it was Jim Thompson.
Correct. So the dynamic is this is another businessman who's coming in to run state government. First time in elected office, it is a responsibility that I don't think he understands it. I don't think anybody does until you get into the position. So he's going to have to rely upon some of the both caucuses, the Senate and the House, to determine where what the policy and what is the end game. But I can't predict how that relationship is going to work over the upcoming months and next few years. It'll be interesting from near and afar, I'll tell you that, but we'll have to wait and see how it plays out.
We're speaking with the Republican leader of the Illinois House, Jim Durkin of Western Springs. I'm Rick Pearson. This is your Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here with the House Republican leader, Jim Durkin of Western Springs. Again, Happy New Year to everybody. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Rick. You too.
We were talking about now with the new governor coming in, who will be sworn in on the 14th. A successful businessman. Bruce Rauner, successful businessman. Rauner comes in. He's kind of a whiteboard. You know, people kind of drew on what they wanted and pictured. And then we saw what we got. I think in many respects, that's what we're seeing with J.D. Pritzker, particularly in the campaign, because, you know, he made commitments.
Yes, he did.
A lot of commitments.
He sure did.
Some unspecified commitments. And there's that same kind of whiteboard imagery to me.
It's a little bit different. I mean, you do have J.B. Pritzker comes from a very, very powerful business family, and you can just right down the road is one of the Hyatt Regency that's part of the Pritzker.
We have the Pritzker Pavilion just down the street.
So they do understand that you need to be good and fair. Civic engagement. But you also he's made commitments to the progressives that helped him get elected, and also to the public sector and trade unions who are when they get involved in elections and they win, they're not going to be shy with their request. And a lot of the proposals that I could see would be probably frowned upon, what I could see from the business community. So you have a businessman who's got a large business empire he come from. He's going to have to thread the needle very, very delicately. And how he does it, I mean, that's up to him. He made the commitments, but there will be a very robust demands and ask made of him from many of the different organizations that had supported his candidacy. And that's going to be his challenge, is that how does he maintain at least a positive business environment in the state of Illinois, which has been challenged over and over again by Springfield, and at the same time living up to his commitments. When you run for governor, that's part of the responsibilities.
Campaigns
are campaigns. We know that there's rhetoric that is used, but you know what? When you win, people are going to follow up on it, and they're going to call you about what you said, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, 6 months ago, of what you stand for, even going back to the primary. There is a lot of, very, I would say, challenging issues that were raised, which people made commitments on during the primary. And, primary is about appealing to a certain base of each one of the parties. And the Republican side, it's probably the more conservative side. And the Democrat primary, it's the left. It's the progressive movement. So those are commitments that have been made. And people from those groups are going to ask, and they're going to expect results.
Well, I kind of saw some of what happened in November as a kind of a follow-up manifestation of 2016 and the Democratic primary there, with the establishment factor of Hillary Clinton, the kind of more left, more liberal Bernie Sanders insurgent wing. And I think we're seeing that nationally on the Democratic side, but now it kind of manifests itself in some of those results in the legislative races, as you kind of touched on.
Sure.
And you had all of the Democratic candidates for governor saying, you know, I'm the progressive candidate.
Who's more liberal? Who's more progressive than the other one?
Right, which, of course, you know, the old school is you run Republican or Democrat, you run to the base, but then you run to the center.
Right.
And I don't know that, well, I mean, with all due respect with Governor Rauner, I'm not sure that we ever knew what his base was after the primary. But with Pritzker, I'm not sure whether we ever got to any kind of center.
I don't think so, and I'm not sure if he's going to have that luxury. But that is where he's going to have to make some difficult decisions. But there's going to be proposals, which I'm not sure if, you know, you have a Democrat caucus in Springfield in the House, which is split between the progressives, the liberals, and the left, and also a lot of downstate and suburban conservatives that are not going to embrace
fewer Democratic downstate conservatives.
Well, that's where we've at least been able
right.
to. Exactly. But there are many Democrats who I would say are probably more Republican with their voting than some of my colleagues. But that's the challenge he's going to have. But that's where the House Republicans will play a role on major policy issues. He's not going to, you know, have a mandate, whether it's 60 or 71 votes on major issues all day long. He's going to have to, you know, reach out to us and say, where can I help out? And you know what? We're at a position in the state right now where I think that we're better off finding common ground on issues.
I refer to Senator Brady, and he referred to it too, as well as stability. We're in a desperate need for normalcy and stability, I think.
Well, when 45,000 people leave the state of Illinois, like they did last year, and it's not because of the weather or for the White Sox that they left. It's because of they're tired of dysfunction and also the responsibilities that they feel are going to be heft upon them from whether it's going to be through tax increases to pay down debt, to solve pension problems. People are leaving the state. And it's very troubling, and it's going to continue. Businesses are closing, families are leaving, retirees are obviously leaving, but it's what I hear day in and day out, whether I'm in the city of Chicago, downstate Illinois, or in the suburbs, that people are finally at a point where they've said, we're leaving Illinois. The window's open just for a little bit. If you guys can't fix this thing and do it on your own without taxing me more, you know, I can manage. But if it's going to be the same old, let's just raise taxes again, get nothing out of it, which is what happened this last go around. People have said, they're throwing their hands up and said, we're out of here. We're going to go to Tennessee. We're going to go to Indiana. We're going to go to Wisconsin. And they're doing it. It's not just empty rhetoric. People are leaving.
Taxes, paying more taxes without getting something for it raises the one last question I have. Gas tax and infrastructure.
Infrastructure, we're at about a 10-year anniversary from the last program.
Yes.
And I think we're due for one. No one has specifically brought a proposal to me. I'm open, and I think that everybody thinks infrastructure is, you know, we're ready for it. The devil's going to be in the details. I'm going to have to wait and see. I'm not going to make a commitment to anyone until I see.
But you're not ruling out a potential increase in the gas tax.
Well, I'm not ruling in either. So I think that everybody needs to understand that if you're going to have an infrastructure program, you got to pay for it.
Well,
so
how we get there, to me, that's one where you actually see some tangible results.
Well, you do. And, you know, it's better than when you pay your taxes. What's the return on your investment that you get out of state government? You don't really know. You're not getting it. So infrastructure program is, I think, is something that this administration, I've talked briefly about it with the governor-elect. It is something that he has an interest in this legislative session. And I'll wait to see what the details are and what the proposals are. But I think everyone is open-minded on an infrastructure program. We're long overdue.
Well, there's something everybody can point to, right?
Sure, absolutely. You need wins. You need wins, particularly for a new administration. There'll be a honeymoon period, I think, with the legislature. And I think maybe from both sides are going to work with this governor. And as I said earlier, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and work with him on issues that are good for the state. And I'll help him with votes, and I'll help him, you know, craft proposals if he's willing to do that.
That's Illinois House Republican Leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs. Leader Durkin, thank you so much for joining me here in studio. And again, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Rick, and go Bears.
Go Bears.
Go Bears.
Go Bears. We'll be back with more right after this.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune. So here we are, 2019 has barely begun, but we've already got an official presidential candidate, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, seeking the Democratic nomination. Here is from her video announcement.
Today, corruption is poisoning our democracy. Politicians look the other way while big insurance companies deny patients life-saving coverage, while big banks rip off consumers, and while big oil companies destroy this planet. Our government's supposed to work for all of us, but instead, it has become a tool for the wealthy and well-connected. The whole scam is propped up by an echo chamber of fear and hate designed to distract and divide us. People who will do or say anything to hang on to power point the finger at anyone who looks, thinks, prays, or loves differently than they do.
Build that wall!
But this dark path doesn't have to be our future. We can make our democracy work for all of us. We can make our economy work for all of us. We can rebuild America's middle class. But this time, we gotta build it for everyone.
That's Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren as she kicks off her presidential campaign for the Democratic nomination for 2020. That also included wrapping up, I believe, a three-day tour of Iowa on today. Joining me now here in the Allstate Skyline studio, a good friend of the program and always someone I can always count on. When I need to have her here.
I'm here for you, buddy. Always.
Amanda Vinicky from WTTW Channel 11 in Chicago. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Of course. Good morning.
And let's go Bears.
Yeah. I've got to say, I already tweeted it out, but there's a pretty cool view of Navy Pier up here. And I'm digging the Ferris wheel has the Bears logo right in its center. It almost makes me want to go for a ride. I haven't actually ever gone on the Navy Pier Ferris wheel, let alone the new one.
I have not been on that.
Yeah, I haven't been on it. But it almost makes me want to.
Well.
Maybe.
You might be able to see the game.
Yeah, there we go. I don't have to buy tickets.
Yeah. I could not afford the tickets. That's for sure. I'm more of along the Winter Classic kind of, yes, the hockey route. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And, you know, what a crazy way to start the new year with everything that's been going on. And
you're telling me,
you know, well, I mean, let's bring it local. And we have the federal complaint against the city's longest-serving alderman, Ed Burke, a one-count complaint of alleged extortion, the alderman allegedly trying to shake down the wealthy owners of a Burger King franchise, among many other fast foods, shake them down for tax appeal legal business in exchange for getting a driveway permit approved on a remodel job for a Burger King.
Yep.
Ed Burke's been around for a long time. And the fact that, and I think it was pretty reasonable to assume that back when they raided his city hall office and his ward office, that the feds probably had tapes to go to that step. And then to also do it on the day that his wife
was being sworn in
is being
for another
term on the Illinois Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. But I think when you look at some of the language in the transcription of the tapes contained in the federal complaint, this is just so bold. And if anything, you know, in Chicago parlance, sloppy.
It really is. Okay, so the long-running assumption has been, well, really several folds. First of all, that Burke knows better, that he's careful, that there's a reason he's been able to be Chicago's longest serving alderman, despite also having this, or while in it, also having his side business, or really his money making business as a property tax attorney, and having his law firm. And that's because he's careful. You don't cross those lines. You know what the lines are. And then the other part of that is that you don't need to cross those lines because people know you're Alderman Ed Burke. And so his firm is hired without having to make any asks directly, because people that are in the know would say, hey, this is a really powerful guy. Let's go to him. Let's hire him. Same sort of principle with House Speaker Mike Madigan, who also has a law firm that operates in doing property tax appeals. And that is what I think is stunning about this, is that, as you noted, it is quite bold. You have conversations that were recorded by the FBI in which it appears to be pretty darn blatant tit for tat, or at least that's what the alderman wants and directs one of his key aides or a ward employee one.
Play hardball.
How it is a service to play hardball. I mean, that's right in there. And even when you have, there's one portion where the ward employee kind of asks back, it says, you know, you want me to follow up? You can almost, we can't hear the conversations, but you read it and you're almost, I'm imagining the ward employee being like, really? We were pretty cut and dry. You want me to go back again? And in fact, Burke does direct him to do so. So that, I think, is what is really surprising about, as you noted, really kind of the sloppiness of this.
Yeah. I mean, there are certain things, obviously, in politics and government and business that are wink and a nod.
Sure.
And to be this blatant, apparently.
Apparently, right. This is all alleged. Obviously, hasn't gone to court. There wasn't an indictment, and that is one of the more surprising aspects as well. This did not go to a grand jury. As you noted, it's a criminal complaint, and we probably will never get a direct answer as to why the feds went that route, but it certainly is not the common way of doing things. It may be, you know, I spoke with an attorney who said, typically you would do something like a criminal complaint versus an indictment if you are dealing with maybe somebody involved in a drug matter or a gang matter, and you think that they're going to run. And
well, I think Blagojevich was a criminal complaint because of the timing of actions.
So that's where there's so much to read from this. Is it a timing of, you know, Burke being aware? Is it a timing of the election? What is it? Why did they decide to go this route? But I think it also opens the door to what more else is coming, because that, to me, in addition to the sort of quote sloppiness, is that you look, there were 9,784 at least phone calls that
were
the FBI,
by the,
yes, recorded. So what all else is in? did they hear? It's kind of crazy to think about. I mean, imagine your last 10,000 phone calls being recorded and somebody listening to them. It's pretty incredible to think about, period, let alone when you have Chicago's longest serving, most powerful alderman on nearly 10,000 phone calls. And sure, there may be more. I mean, that came evidently, that 9,784th call was on January 21st of 2018.
Well, I mean, when one of those that was cited in the complaint was, I think, was phone call number 399. I'm going, even that, you know, okay, that's 400.
Yep,
all right.
Yep.
What else is there? But so Burke gives up his long-held position as a finance chairman. Along with that was control of the workers' compensation program in Chicago, which the city's workers' compensation program, which, you know, was the source of a lot of speculation that might be a source of what was going on with the federal activity. But it kind of an inglorious quick fall here. And yet, he goes on Facebook, which Ed Burke never struck me as kind of the Facebook,
the social media guy.
Yeah, the social media guy.
Scrolling through his Instagram when he wakes up in the morning like I do.
To declare that he's continuing his bid for re-election.
Yeah. And he thanked his supporters for standing by him. He did acknowledge what was going on. He said, I'm sure by now you've heard. And then he said, but I am still running for re-election. Have a happy, healthy new year. It was basically the summation of his very brief Facebook video.
I mean, it's been quite a run.
Quite a run. You know, I will say, so I was, the day that his offices were raided, I went to his ward office in the neighborhood, and a couple of things struck me. So it was cold that day, unlike today. And by the time that it was clear that the agents had all left out the back with a computer. We went a couple doors down. There's, you know, sort of a Latino bakery, and went to one of those places, you know, you get your tongs and you load up a tray and then you go up to the front and pay, and got that and a hot cup of coffee. And I spoke with the, I don't know if they're the owners or whoever was working at this bakery. And I was like, you know, do you know what's going on there? Do you know Alderman Burke? And they're like, no, who? And I just add that and to say that he does have a tough reelection. Now you do have kind of the new progressive boss is what he's been crowned. New Congressman Chuy Garcia having endorsed one candidate in of the four that are running against Burke. But there's many who say that his neighborhood loves him because he has so much power. And then there are others who say, what has he possibly done for me? And just down the street from his ward office, a local business that doesn't even know who he is.
That he exists.
Mm-hmm.
We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky from WTTW Channel 11 in Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on WGN. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio, joined by a good friend of the program, a good friend of mine, Amanda Vinicky from WTTW Channel 11 in Chicago. We're talking about the travails of Chicago's longest-serving alderman, Ed Burke. And we've got a call from Ron. Ron, welcome to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick, and Happy New Year to you and your guests. Just wanted to ask your guests, do you expect any political ramifications for the some of these mayoral candidates? I know the Sun-Times did a full story about Toni Preckwinkle and the money she received donating. So just wanted to ask you about that. Will be the ramifications for some of the candidates? Thank you,
Ron. And, yeah, the Tribune did one, too. Just want to throw that in there.
But, every news outlet definitely yes. has. WTTW, yes. I will add, as well.
Yes. And, yeah, I mean, I think the point is that obviously the you have Gary Chico, you have Susana Mendoza, you have obviously Toni Preckwinkle. I mean, even to some respects, I think you could even say Bill Daley, you know, with backgrounds that involve Ed Burke. But the fact
if you've been around Chicago politics, you've been around Ed Burke.
Yes, and been successful
exactly
in Chicago politics. But the fact of Burke hosting a fundraiser, the fact that this complaint mentioned specifically a $10,000 contribution directed to,
quote, another politician,
which is
fill
Tony,
in the quote,
which
yeah,
is Toni
exactly.
Preckwinkle, and then you kind of had this mad scramble to try to explain that, well, no, we never accepted it. No, then we deposited it, but then we refunded it. But, oh, yeah, they didn't report it. And then all of a sudden now they're reporting it. And then the Fed complaint says
I've got it right here.
That it was because $10,000 is over the limit. $5,600 is the legal limit for a contribution. And then the Fed complaint says that amount was actually reduced down to $5,600, which Preckwinkle's people say they didn't take the $5,600.
Right. So in terms of mayoral ramifications,
it's a mess.
First of all, you're going to have every candidate try to use this to their advantage if they are able. You saw Preckwinkle try to tie Gary Chico to this because of the fundraiser, when in fact she's the one in that is cited in the complaint. So there's that. You know, you've had every story will point out that Susana Mendoza had Burke play the piano at her wedding. The one who this is most directly affecting right now is Toni Preckwinkle, because of the obvious reasons. When it became apparent that the politician that Burke was trying to get money for in this alleged extortion was Toni Preckwinkle for the fundraiser that he hosted at his home, that rose to that level. And then, as Rick noted, these questions of, all right, so why wasn't the $10,000 from this restaurateur reported initially? And then where is this $5,600? It's bizarre because you don't often have the FBI mess up, at least.
Right.
That is the notion. Again, though, you also, we also, as we began our conversation, Rick, you also assume that Burke doesn't mess up or doesn't make blatant asks. So perhaps this is the FBI getting things wrong, where when in fact the Prankwinkle campaign returned the full $10,000 instead of just the portion above and beyond the limit that by law a person can contribute to a campaign. Or is there something amiss? You have many candidates calling for the State Board of Elections or other authorities to audit Prankwinkle's campaign finances and fundraising. You even had, I believe, Bob Fioretti saying that this should cause her to step back from the mayor's race. That is not certainly going to happen. But you better believe that once we start having more forums and debates, there are going to be even more finger pointing happening at Prankwinkle. And actually, already you already have Chico, prior to this, seeing her, I think, as the front runner in using a one of his, he's got two campaign ads right out, and one of them he spends not introducing himself, but more really going against her. So clearly she is seen as somebody who the rest of the field wants to topple, bring down. And this certainly gives them an opportunity to do it if they are able to seize an advantage.
Well, and, you know, along with this is the fact that initially the Prankwinkle people said that they hadn't corresponded with the restaurateur. Then they acknowledged that, yes, as the FBI complaint says, they had, but then they won't tell us what they actually
They won't provide emails. They did provide us. I did a story on Friday on this. Where is the $5,600? This mystery money. Did they get it? Did they not? What is going on? And while the Prankwinkle campaign provided essentially screenshots of their fundraising software, right, showing a taking in $10,000 and then also refunding it, they did not provide any of the email correspondence to back up the storyline, in which they say they immediately got the money and then asked, what do you want us to do with it? Because it is not in fitting with the campaign finance laws of the state of Illinois. They didn't hear a response. They say they refunded it in full. We don't know.
Not a good look here, as we are just only weeks away from determining what in all likelihood is going to be a runoff for mayor of Chicago.
It certainly is a tumultuous start to the year.
Hey, but it's Chicago. It's how politics is done.
I know it's. Could you write this? It's sitting Supreme Court justice, married to the. I mean, you couldn't.
No,
you couldn't write this.
No. Mm-hmm. Scott Turow could.
Yeah. I'd read it.
Absolutely. Amanda Vinicky, WTTW Channel 11 correspondent. Thank you so much for joining me this morning, and Happy New Year to you.
It is my pleasure. Thanks. Happy New Year to you too.
And go Bears.